I'm curious about looking back on 70 years, how things have changed for composers, and even not only with the scores and with the idea of recording. If we think about Guy Touvreau, you know, recording back in the 60s and 70s, as opposed to now, things have changed a lot. Does technology make things a little easier? And tell us a little bit about your experiences looking back at 70 years.
Well, first of all, it's hard to imagine that actually I am 70 years old right now, but I suppose I'm not the first person to have come to that conclusion. In looking back, I can remember in my youth, I'm almost a little bit loath to admit to this, but of course I came to Recorded Sounds via the old 78s and moved from there through, of course, 33 LPs. And even now, probably we have to say that CDs are perhaps with us only for a limited amount of time. Everything is moving to streaming and digital audio right now. But the idea of the availability of music, the ready availability, I think really, to my way of thinking, reached an explosive high point when the CD was introduced. Vinyl was great, and those of us of a certain age have certainly gone through many affectionate experiences as a result of vinyl. But it seems that the technology now that enables CDs to be made, and made rather efficiently, has enabled there to be a very real renaissance, I think, of interest in new music and new composers and new orchestras and getting the music out there very effectively. So I feel very, very fortunate to be the happy beneficiary of that new technology, which makes possible this kind of proliferation of new music.
There are some lovely recordings, and I wanted to, we'll focus in on some of those here in a minute, but I wanted to do sort of a broader question that when you return to a genre like a symphony or return to a genre like a piano sonata, I noticed that there is like a sonatina and there's a sinfonetta, so, you know, sort of these smaller versions of the works. Is it a challenge to return to that sort of genre, or is it sort of a joy to be like, oh, well, you know, I didn't get to say this in my first symphony, or I didn't say this in my sinfonetta, I want to say it in my second symphony or my, you know, next piano sonata?
Yeah, actually, that's a wonderful question. I think for me that was realized, that question, the implications of it, when I wrote my second symphony, because the first symphony was a rather subdued and dark and melancholy work. And because it was composed at the time during when my mother unexpectedly passed away, there's a great deal of basically brooding melancholy in it. For the second symphony, I wanted a work that was both larger in architectural intent and also had a wider spectrum of moods and sonorities. And in addition, I think more of an overt narrative of moving from a rather tumultuous beginning to a kind of emerging light. And that's why I titled it the Ascendant Symphony. The hope would be that it would embrace the idea of the ascendancy of the human spirit in questing for the highest that it could achieve.
My guest is Jack Gallagher, and we wish you a wonderful birthday. I would end asking, I know it might be like juggling sometimes, teaching not just composition or trumpet or orchestration in theory, but it's all related. I mean, it's all music, and certainly a good technique in trumpet and sort of developing a technique for composition, I'm sure, have some similarities. But is it a juggling act sometimes to try to find that time to get the pencil on the score and to compose?
Absolutely. And when the full teaching year is in session, usually from about September through May of each year, it's a lot harder to find that time because there is a lot that goes into teaching both classes and individual students. Having said that, I think you're absolutely right that everything one does musically kind of goes in the bank and reinforces all the other musical activities that are pursued. And in a way, I feel as a teacher at a liberal arts college at the College of Worcester in Ohio that this is sort of strikes at the core of the very essence of liberal arts, that in a way we hope that people can become very much engaged in a passion, which may or may not be what they end up doing for their entire lifetime, but that nevertheless, as a passion, informs their creativity and their processes for the rest of their lives. So that may sound a little bit grandiose, but I feel that not necessarily majoring in any one given area is a guarantee of finding a vocational outlet that one is going to find satisfying for the rest of one's life, but rather learning to bring passion and dedication, hard work, and self-realization to whatever it is that one is doing becomes very much a transferable skill, and in that respect can make one very well equipped for the challenges of a lifetime.
Well, we're looking forward to so much and appreciate that there are these wonderful recordings and look to so much more.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you so much for having me with you, John.